Welcome to KC by Sari, a podcast for Kansas City enthusiasts. I'll take you behind the scenes and you'll learn why this Midwestern gem is so special. In today's episode, I talk to Garrett, VP of Strategic Partnerships for Sandlot Goods. While their products are made right here in Kansas City, Sandlot Goods partner with professional and college sports all over the country. Here's Garrett to talk about the big impact their company has on KC and the surrounding cities.
KC by Sari.
What is your role within Sandlot?
So my role is primarily in sales and marketing. So I'm the Vice President of Strategic Partnerships, but that does cover a wide range of things. But ultimately, I'm looking to establish fun partnerships to do a lot of business with. So Homage is a great example of that, as well as trying to oversee how we can slowly but steadily increase our marketing and awareness of Sandlot. So that's one of the reasons why I'm here today.
What inspired the name Sandlot Goods?
So Sandlot Goods was inspired by Chad Hickman, our founder, basically his childhood. So growing up with him and his older brother, and then eventually his younger brothers, going to the Sandlot during the summer. So they definitely had kind of a Sandlot setting, if you will, like a place where all the kids in the neighborhood would go, and it would be going from house to house and bringing all the kids along. So the idea being, Our product should bring back memories, should think of like a Sandlot setting for someone. I like to say everybody finds their own Sandlot. For example, we work a lot with the Kansas City Current. It was not around when most of us were kids, but there's a lot to be said to wearing a Current hat and kind of thinking of your own memories of growing up, and whether it's with soccer and if it's playing with your kids, or the reverse, like if you're a girl growing up playing soccer, or even a boy, it goes across the board. So I think the idea being going back to just finding your Sandlot with our products, because they're vintage inspired and they are high quality as well.
And you mentioned the Current. Obviously, Sandlot has partnerships with many teams. What has it been like growing the relationships with both professional and collegiate teams within the area and beyond Kansas City as well?
I think each have been their own experience, and that's not a bad way either way. I think it's something where, on the collegiate standpoint, we carry over 24 licenses, and these colleges, these universities are established. And so they also have certain ways with their licensing as far as requirements. They have third parties that can oversee it. So it's very well established. There's certain rules of the road that have been followed for a long time. So that's one way of charting and navigating that path, and also gaining permission for licensing can be different on the collegiate side. So KU is a good example. We got licensing for the Jayhawks last year, but that took a lot of time to get to, and which I understand. Like, they're not just going to let anybody have hat licensing, for example. So that's its own journey. And then with the Current, I think it's really great because they have grown up kind of before all of our eyes, and now with last week's stadium opening and just how successful that was, and just the energy and passion that goes beyond the field. Is very contagious in a good way. And so for them, we've been working with them for a few years now, and I think it's been fun to watch how they have evolved as an organization. Like, in theory, they are a startup in that way. And so seeing how they have matured their business operations, and we see it from the kind of products that they're ordering, the approvals they go through, the way that they protect and promote their brand. So it's been different, though, than a collegiate standpoint, because not only is it a professional team, but also just where and how they're raising their brand awareness versus a KU who's been around since the 1800s kind of thing.
What's the strategy with the partners you are working with in terms of the teams and who you feel like is a good fit to partner with Sandlot?
Yeah, I think we look for people who kind of share a similar vision of creating something that is unique and can kind of pay homage to the past, as well as a focus on quality, and the design, I think, is part of that too. So that's sort of a combination. It's nothing is rocket science on it, but it's more of just finding someone who is willing to collaborate on and share ideas and build up something that everybody feels super passionate about. and that we think the consumer is going to be passionate about as well. So that, and a lot of that is, especially at the local level with Kansas City, there's just, it's big city, small world kind of mindset. And so a lot of it is you either talk to somebody who's like, hey, you should really go meet this person and talk to them. They're kind of speaking the same language as you. They have a big passion for what you're talking about as well. But also we get a lot of reach outs from people across the US who share that same thing of, hey, we see something that looks like it took a little bit longer to make, a little bit more emphasis was put on it, but it was done the right way. That's who we're looking to work with.
Yeah. And especially around Kansas City, I think that Sandlot hats in particular are very easy to recognize. You know when you pass someone on the street if they're wearing a Sandlot hat.
Yeah.
How is Sandlot different from other companies, especially in the hat world?
The biggest difference for us is the combination of a focus on quality and then domestically made. So it's not necessarily one or the other. I think they both come together into a nice package. So we are one of the few domestic hat makers left. Most operations moved overseas for a lot of the hat makers that we all know and grew up with over the past couple decades. And then even some that were well known as being one of the few hat makers are now acquired by the bigger companies. So it's, we feel like we're even in rarer territory these days of being USA made. And that means, from my perspective on a sales side, is I can't compete with a trucker that costs $3 that's made over in China. There's, if somebody wants that, they're just gonna go get that. Because for us, we start people at $15 an hour. If you're full time, you get health benefits. And we're doing it differently, and you could say an old school way, but in the new school world of doing business, where it's super hard to make things in the U.S. for a variety of reasons. But that's a challenge that we see as a really good challenge to undertake. Like, it doesn't make us frustrated that we pay people $15 an hour. It's exciting. Like, we want this to work. We want this to be a thing that can be more normalized. So that's, I think, it's a big differentiator. And the other thing is, like, we're not only doing it here, but we're trying to do it well. So we're not just making a hat and then spitting it out and getting it. So it's not any kind of let's get as many things out as we can as promotional products and just worry about the quality later. It's not, we want everything to be high quality, something that we're proud of and that the person who is ordering it is super proud of as well.
And we just walked through the warehouse. Can you walk through the process of making some of your products?
Yeah, so for us, everything that we make is made within this building. The only thing that isn't is apparel, and we do a lot of decorating with, but we have a direct-to-garment printer that we use for that, and that's kind of a unique difference from a typical shirt company as well. But our main focus are hats, and those are the hardest thing that we make in terms of steps and how many hands touch it, and then the chance of failure as well. You are making a 3D object versus we make pennants. That's a very flat object, and you don't have to take into account a lot of factors, whereas hats can go through a ton of steps, end up not fitting well, and the whole batch is ruined kind of thing. So it's fascinating from that standpoint. None of us have big manufacturing backgrounds either. That's the other thing, is we are building this plane as we fly it. So for hats, that's a process that starts on just sourcing the right fabric and bringing that in rolls. So we are cutting things down from rolls, using metal dies, using a small clicker, very much an old school way, and then doing it as well with minimal waste cuts. So that's just not only good from an environmental standpoint, but also for us, we want to get as much as we can out of every piece of fabric. So from there, the hat pieces are gathered and then sent over to the hat team still in this building. And that hat team goes through and assembles the hat step by step, and sewing the different panels together, putting the sweatband on, also getting decorated. So it'll go over to the embellishment team to decorate and oftentimes come back to the hat team to finish. So it is a multi-step process, usually touching a dozen different hands until it finally reaches our team over in the fulfillment side of the building.
What is time between when an idea comes up versus when the hat is actually on shelves? So for example, one of the hats you sell is Chiefs inspired hat of a past commercial where mm-hmm. it says chefs, mm-hmm. which is a very, if you know, you know, sort of thing. I find right. that hat absolutely hilarious. I know a bunch of my close friends got that hat when it was released. So what was the turnover time between when that idea came to be versus hitting shelves at a local store?
I think if for that one, that was one where we really made a push for that as a hat for the playoffs for that year. So that was something that it had been in the back of our heads for a while. And then in November, it was finally just, why not? Like, why don't we do this? What are we waiting for on it? So that was a quick turnaround. Within about 5 weeks, it was on shelves. And a lot of it goes to, it just depends. Where it depends upon if we have the fabric already in-house, if it's something that's been brewing for a while. And then I think a really important part is the embellishment side of it. So that one is simple because it's block letters. And most of the design kind of can be in the, if you know, you know, the joke part of it. But for some of the other things, we definitely want to sample them. We want to make sure they're right. It can take some time especially for embroidery, to get those details right. And so that can oftentimes take more than a month from here's the idea, let's get it to the graphic designer to mock up, to here it's on a shelf. That can take anywhere from 2 months to 3 months, just depending upon. And that's for our own products. For the custom wholesale we do, we can try and accelerate things a little bit faster, but it just depends upon, like a partnership could be something where we're already familiar with those, with what they want, what they might need, and how to work together. And so we're able to do a quicker turn and burn. So I think like Homage is a great example. I'm working with Homage right now on something that we're familiar with each other and can easily trade things back and forth. And then we're gonna try and get something out the door here in the next 2 weeks. So it's actually a very quick turn and burn.
Speaking of Homage, what was that process like getting connected with them? And as we mentioned, that Sandla is obviously not just local, but on a national scale, growing this brand nationally. What has that process been like?
Yeah, I think it's relationship based. That's kind of the key summary of it. So Ryan Vessler is the founder of Homage, and we ended up meeting him at a licensed trade show in Vegas. So that was Chad and another person who met him. I actually was going to go there, but we had our third child, and so I was out on leave at the time. So I met Ryan later, but they established a really good connection with him. And we ended up having him come down to Kansas City, spent a couple days with him, just really got to know each other. And that was really just kind of lining up values, making sure it was something that we all wanted to do together. And I think we all had a big passion in spending time with Ryan. And then after he left, like, it's someone we want to partner with and do cool things. And I think we have seen that only continue to evolve and to blossom over that was probably May of last year, so almost a year ago. And so it's building the relationship and then building the trust too. I think that's another thing. So you look at what Homage has done and how we partner with them, primarily with the New Heights stuff, but as well as with a few other things. But with New Heights, as that gained more popularity and awareness, I think for them to trust us to turn around and make the hat for that was a big deal. And I think we took that seriously as well. So it's a prime example though. Like, same thing with the Kansas City Current. We have good relationship built with them, with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. We know them personally over there as well and want to help tell their story. So it's just kind of whether it's a business cliche, as true as it is, it's a lot of it's about the relationships. And I think a lot of it, I read it in a book the other day, where a lot of times people just want to spend time with other people that they enjoy and trust, and that carries over into the business world as well.
Yeah, and it's great to have those relationships where you can bounce off each other professionally as well as personally, because then you can just, that idea of continuing to grow business and grow your message across all different channels. So it's great to have those relationships that not only benefit from my financial standpoint, but just continuing that inspiration, finding new things to do together.
Yeah, and I think that's, once again, like Homage is a great example of that. We love what they do and kind of their mindset and what they look for with their products, and it just seems to match pretty well. So
you're holding a yard ball while we
absentmindedly playing with a yard ball. Yeah.
Where did the inspiration come for that? And for those who are unfamiliar, can you explain what it is?
Yes. So yard ball is, in short, the ball for all. It's in between a baseball and a softball in terms of size. And the key difference is we source a high quality leather that's already broken in. And then the other thing is a soft core, so that in theory, it's how it is, you don't need a glove to play. And you also don't need a set of rules or anything. It's simply a leather ball that's stitched together here at Sandlot as well. And that's it. Take it and run with it what you will. We get a lot of people ask, like, what are the rules? What's the game? There intentionally isn't one. Like, that is your imagination. Once again, find your sandlot. Mm-hmm. Take this ball and go find your sandlot. And it can be easier to use this in a lot of different settings. Like, you don't need a glove, for example. So if you are going to a baseball game and someone has this in their car, if people didn't bring a glove, it doesn't matter. You all can play, can do catch. Or the neighbor, throwing with the neighbors. Or even inside, like, we'll use it in the office to throw around while we're ideating. And that's kind of where it started, was that sort of office setting where they were doing a lot of paint. They're doing a lot of painting. I think I actually ended up like a Maine KC coffee shop during the pandemic. And Maine KC has a close relationship with Sandlot. Actually, one of their founders, Thomas, is the CEO over here at Sandlot now. And so they were helping paint, had a giant paint tape ball. It's a giant blue ball as they were rolling up all the tape and just started tossing it around. And then realized this could actually be something that people... A lot of people like naturally want to do something like that, throw a ball around, just kind of while, like, even me, I'm still playing with it. I'm not even thinking about it while we talk. So from there, it was definitely a pandemic product that was born, and we were trying to look for the right way to launch it as well. And that's something where trying to get a large set of awareness on this with no budget. And then also in terms of the high quality leather, it's also a lot of initial upfront cost. So Kickstarter was something that everybody thought would be a great idea, but none of us had any idea on how to do it. And so that's one thing. When I came on board shortly after they had decided, yes, we're going to definitely do a Kickstarter, and said, go figure out how to do it. And so we did, and launched a Kickstarter, did a 30-day window, and sold 4,700 balls to over 2,000 people. And then that was during the summer, and then furiously made yard balls over the next 5 months in order to get everybody their yard balls for the holidays. Because I think a lot of people saw it as a great gift that would be ready in time for others, in addition to getting some for themselves. So that's where it was born. And then from there, it has only taken off. I think we saw a little bit of a lull post-Kickstarter, which was great because it allowed us over the winter to build up stock. And then since then, it has been very hard to keep the ball on shelves. And that's not only because of the demand, but also for us, we make all these by hand. So it's not a quick turn, quick, easy process. It's 108 stitches all done by hand. And that is something that takes time, and you want to do it the right way in order to have that, once again, that high quality ball. So it's not a perfect ball at all. We'll sometimes get people who are like, hey, this is like the shape. It's not exactly perfectly round, but it's fine. Like, it's meant to be this kind of vintage looking ball and vintage feeling ball that is still used all the time by people. So.
When you mentioned playing with it mindlessly during our conversation, my fiance has it on his desk at home. He might even have one at his desk at work as well. And he just kind of, I think when he's thinking through something and he's trying to figure out what to do, he's just, you know, tossing it back and forth. And it's sort of become that almost stress ball in the sense of, okay, let me think through this. And I think it's that mindless way to work out some energy before you're working your mental energy.
Yeah, like humans today are just always running around. We're always doing something. And so I think that's something where this gets used a lot, even though it's kind of opposite of today's world of technology and everything, where it's just you're channeling some of that, whether it's nervous energy or you're trying to think through something or anything like that. Like, it's just, that's what it can be kind of do. So it's fun. And it's used in a variety of ways. We've had a youth baseball team use it for batting practice because it actually helps them kind of see where and how they're hitting a little bit better, the spin on this ball and the direction. And it survived all the hits of a season of a bat, which is fun. So then some people say they order our seconds quality, which still, it's not something that we would put in a box and sell at a full price, but it's also not something that you would toss out. And so it's a good seconds ball. A lot of people use those and get those for their dogs and throw and whatnot. So it gets a lot of use in a different ways, which is what we want. We don't want it to be just a set game or anything like that.
Aside from the yard ball, what are some of your favorite products that you've seen Sandlot produce?
Good question. I think for me, being a Jayhawk, seeing a lot of the KU hats and the collection we've come out there, I really like, and a lot of that's because we try and emphasize primarily on the vintage marks. The reason I like those products, not only because I'm biased, but also because I think we try and pair it in a way also with material. So when we look at the 1912 Jayhawk, which is its own, it's, I think it's one of the actually people's favorite Jayhawks that out of all of them. But we paired that with a nice wool because it just seemed like something at the time that would be worn and kind of goes with that Jayhawk. Whereas the 1941 Jayhawk, the angry Jayhawk, the Warhawk, if you will, I would guess was inspired by the breakout of World War II. It's a tough Jayhawk, and so we paired that with a tough duck cotton. So when you think like Carhartt, that feel that is actually very in right now. Everybody wants that workwear kind of vibe. We put the Warhawk on there because it seems to match with the fabric. So it's a little bit of that extra bit of storytelling, and I think that's kind of what makes those products some of my favorite, especially as a collection as a whole, because you're kind of storytelling subconsciously through even the fabric selection.
Well, and I love hearing how mindful each decision is, that one fabric for one Jayhawk didn't feel like the right fabric for another. So hearing about how mindful each detail is, I think also speaks to Sandlot as a whole and how much is going into each of the products that you're creating. That, to your point earlier, you're not just trying to churn and burn products for people to
right.
enjoy. It's really the full process from design to being in store and every decision going into it, even the process itself, having all that material here, you're not just stitching on a hat you purchased from somewhere else, I think
right.
is really cool.
It's something where I think collections I really like working with too are with the Negro League Baseball Museum, because there's so much storytelling that needs to take place. It seems essential for society today to be remembering these, remembering why there were separate leagues and how. What's still crazy to me is like the end goal of this league was to run itself out of business and to incorporate black players into Major League Baseball. And thank goodness it was successful in that regard. I can't imagine today, in today's world, there would be two separate leagues. But what's fun with them is they have the rights to all the marks, and then a lot of the marks and designs of these teams are just brilliant. Like it's amazing, and the creativity that they all show. So this year, we're celebrating the 1924 Monarchs who won the World Series, and taking their uniforms, those marks at the time, and what I always say is we really like to play at the intersection of playfulness and respect, and so respecting these marks of what they are and then the story they tell, but then also finding the right way to storytell. So that's a collection that we spent a little bit of time working on and have talked with the museum and talked with potential wholesalers about. This is all of these are meant for something, and the hat specifically. So rolling out a hat that tries to have and mimic the pinstripe hat that the 1924 team wore, to doing just a simple dad hat, but taking the Monarchs mark from the jersey and put it on there. So it's appealing to that kind of audience, but there's storytelling that goes with it. And then even taking a nod to kind of the modern day championship hats, which here in Kansas City, we're very lucky. We've seen a few of those over the past couple of years. With the Chiefs, but kind of designing what would that have looked like back in 1924. So take that design mindset, put it to 1924, and then pair all these up with the patch that the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum had designed and released for the 100-year anniversary. So kind of almost treating that like a World Series logo kind of thing. So that's, I think, a great example where we're trying to take our time and do it right, and we think it'll be successful and like do some storytelling that otherwise wouldn't be out there, and getting more recognition for this team and then kind of what the whole mission was.
I love the Negro League products that Sandlot has created, especially because as a young kid, Sandlot is one of my sibling and I's favorite movies. Mm-hmm. There's a big age difference between my siblings and mine. It was one of the movies we were all able to enjoy it at various ages. And
right.
I remember seeing the KC hat on one of the boys, never really understanding as a little kid why his... I just thought it was a funny coincidence. I always loved seeing the hat. And then mm-hmm. later years and as an adult, realizing that he's wearing a hat that's playing into the Monarchs and the Negro League. And as someone who re-fell in love with Kansas City as an adult, that's one of those tributes to Kansas City within pop culture mm-hmm. that was so cool to see as a kid, and then understanding the backstory. And now with Sandlot, especially
yeah.
paying tribute to that as well with the Negro Leagues is awesome.
Well, it's what's nice is like it's styles that carry through. So a lot of those marks are, some people, I know a lot of people buy those hats without the context. They like the style. of those marks. And so that's a credit to, I don't even know who to credit, who designed it back in the day. But it's also kind of shows like how things come full circle. Like you look at right now, as of this recording, there's a vote that's going to take place on the Royals moving downtown. And baseball downtown seems foreign to all of us, but it's coming full circle because the Monarchs used to play downtown. They would be blocks from where the Monarchs played. And the Monarchs were powerhouse back in the day. And so there's just, and all that's right in front of us. But a lot of us don't necessarily see it. We haven't been exposed to it, or we haven't studied it. And so I think you look at even like how many more school kids are going to the Negro League Baseball Museum now and just learning that story and learning and understanding like what it, how society was and how we've grown up. Hopefully a lot of us, most of us have. But that's something where I think it's like, once again, like things can come full circle and it can be a vintage mark, but paired with a modern material or a modern color scheme, like we'll use local teams' colors with that Monarch's mark with permission from the museum, knowing that that still helps tell the story a little bit. Someone's going to then wear that to a football game or wear that to a baseball game. But it just, it's one of those things where you look at like this baseball vote and you're like, yeah, this has happened before. And here's a cool history that we should probably tell with this as this tries to become a thing.
On the topic of collaborations, do you have any dream collaborations that you would love for Sandlot to be part of?
I think it'd be fun to do something with Mahomes. I always say that as I laugh because he's an owner of the Kansas City Current. And I think Nike is the primary for uniforms and everything through the Current. So I always drop it in different talks with the people at the Current. I'm like, you know, if Patrick ever needs a hat, I doubt in his contract with Adidas there's an exclusivity clause for Sandlot goods. Or let's make a hat with Adidas, kind of sort of thing. So that's kind of my very, this is what I would selfishly want to do. I think it'd just be fun. Because I think the other thing, like looking at the way Patrick puts his effort into his different businesses off the football field, his foundation, but also the where places that he invests, there's that kind of care and strong desire to make it as great as you can. And I think that's something that is attractive as well. It'd be fun to work with and kind of see how and what concepts he would come up with.
Yeah, it is really crazy. I mean, in the best way possible, but the effect that the Mahomes family, and Patrick specifically, has had on Kansas City, I didn't realize that the Royals sell jerseys with Mahomes' name on it as being a part owner. I went to an event with work at the Kauffman, and I was seeing all these, you know, little boys with jerseys with Patrick's name on the back, and it was kind of that moment where from two different perspectives, from like social media and marketing and all of that perspective, I was like, wow, this is like such a reach. But then thinking just as like a local and someone who is so engraved in Kansas City, the effect that he has had on our city and how much has changed.
It's very real. Like, yeah, just awareness he can bring. But then Brittany and him, I think they both embraced the city as soon as they moved here. And you look at both what they have done and achieved, and Patrick not only on the field, but the fact that he seems to care about the city and invest in the city. And then, I mean, Brittany helped bring about the first stadium in the world designed for women's professional sports. I mean, literally only a couple other people can say that in the entire world. So that's kind of where I think they definitely are tangible. I like tangible evidence of like the great momentum that's in Kansas City. And I think that allows companies such as Sandlot space or room to try and make it as a company, and then also become more of a national company and not just a local company. It's like we're Kansas City based, but we have national aspirations, and we are already ship the yard ball around the country. We do wholesale orders even outside the United States, not only within of our own products, but also we custom make products. So it's something that I think we here in Kansas City, it feels like since I moved back, I'm not originally from Kansas City, lived here for 4 years, moved away, but then came back about 7 years later, and just the momentum that the city has had over the past decade is just stunning. And so I think we're just trying to be a part of that and play a small but mighty role in it.
Are there any new drops coming soon that you would be able to share? Any collaborations in the works? Insider information?
Insider information. I don't know. That's what this podcast was. I think going back to the 100-year anniversary of the 1924 Monarchs is something that we're excited to put out. later this spring, because it's a new mark that we haven't used before. I don't think we've seen it around a lot, but what they used on the front of their jerseys, and then just to really celebrate what it is. Like, it's, we're celebrating a World Series championship, and I think that's something that's fun and new that's coming from us. So I would say stick around for that, but we have a couple other things in the works, but those are ones that I want to get a little bit further down the pipeline before I put it out there. But yeah, keep your eye out for that, and definitely come visit us at our retail store down in Park Place in Leawood, and the Made in KC marketplaces as well. We get a lot of traffic on the plaza, and there's a lot going on there, so that's a fun place to visit.
And the storefront in Park Place is newish, recently opened. So what was the decision process in that location and having that brick and mortar spot?
Yeah, so we had been looking for a little bit, just feeling like a retail store would be a nice, natural next move, just to have something physically there, and not just be online and wholesale accounts. And so we were really looking for a good spot that wasn't too big. We didn't want to chew off too much. And there's surprisingly not as many options as you'd think for a small retail shop in the city these days. And so this opportunity, this spot opened up, and we really liked Park Place, and we have some people who also have a store in there, and it really had great things to say. And so we took the plunge, and so it's been an adventure. I think there's been a lot of learnings for us too, of really having a full out retail store. And then for us too, we're not just putting Sandlot products in there, we're also putting in products from other companies that we see either have like a high quality USA made factor or share similar values. And so it's been fun to kind of see how and where we can do our own pairing. It's kind of the reverse, where we're supplying products that go with somebody, a retailer's collection, and it's that now we're looking at the other end and how can we bring things in that really complete what we're trying to offer.
Where do you see Sandlot in the next 5 years? Like, what are some of the big overarching goals that Sandlot has?
I think it's for us is definitely, obviously, an increase in sales is what we're looking for. And there's ambitious targets to double, to stack on top of that. But really, I think it's that in 5 years to be able to scale up and be five times the company we are is ambitious, even though it might sound kind of simple and straightforward. So scaling up manufacturing is something that, one, once again, none of us have any experience in doing, but two, it's about finding that sweet spot within manufacturing where you can reach those economies of scale, but also not kind of be out in front of your skis. And so I think for us, there's a lot of testing the water and doing that, but obviously scaling up and getting to a good position. As any small business, you're always fighting for market share, you're fighting for cash flow, you're fighting for all these things. And so I think in 5 years, reaching that point of stability and then continuing to be who we are, not only in terms of our values, but in kind of like where we're going for vintage and design and that kind of the principle. So I hope there's more great relationships similar to the ones that we have today.
We mentioned the Park Place storefront. Where else shopping in person can people find Sandlot goods?
Yeah, so you can find us locally. Most of our SKUs are at the local and regional level. So kind of the big box retailers, we're in Dick's Sporting Goods, we're in Scheels, and then in the primarily the Kansas City specific Made in KC, we're in the neighborhood shops there. West Side Story is actually our first account, so it was so much fun seeing the different press and the way that Chris and that team, it seemed to explode with Taylor Swift and the vintage Chiefs gear that he's so good at sourcing. And so that we're in small stores like that, and then we take just as much pride in that because we, once again, like they do really cool things and we respect what they do, and our hats seem to fit their vibe. So yeah, we're sprinkled all kind of throughout the city, and then a lot of our custom products are throughout the city in different coffee shops or other retail. And so I would say you just got to look for the triple stitch on the back, and if it shows Made in Kansas City, USA, we are that spot. So
as I mentioned earlier, your hats are very easy to spot throughout the city, and mentioning the collaborations, my fiance is a very big fan, has, I'm not sure how many hats, I didn't count them, but he has a lot. And we were in French Custard not that long ago, and he just has he also is very into that sort of thing, and he has a really big appreciation for hats. He's a big hat guy.
And we were checking out, and he looked at me, he goes, "That's a Sandlot hat." And he just could see it right off the bat. And
yeah.
I was like, "Oh yeah, it's so cool." And there have been other occasions where him and I are out and he gets so excited where he'll be like, "That's a Sandlot hat. I can just tell, you can tell. It's so obvious." And so it's so funny when I'm with him, when he's able to spot that. But again, going back to making your mark on, at least talking from the standpoint locally, making your mark on the city where people are able to get to that point where you can walk into into a store and see, oh, Sandlot collaborated or did something with this brand. How cool is that?
It's fun. It's fun being on the Sandlot side and seeing it. And that's where, like this weekend we were driving and I pointed out to my wife someone doing yard work and they had a Sandlot hat on and you could just tell. But even going to a current game, and then that's where you really see like the back of the hats and you see our logo on the triple stitch on the back of it, and that's real. And then going to a KU game earlier this year and seeing different KU hats that are Sandlot made there, it's awesome. It kind of shows where you see all the, like, New Era and 47 brand, like these well-established brand that just make millions of hats each year, and we're out there fighting and getting hats on heads, and so it's inspiring to see. And it's also tangible, once again, like a tangible result, and that's different than I think my own career, where oftentimes I'm working for a service rather than a product. So being an actual product space and seeing it out there in the wild is just, it's really cool.
Where can people follow along to keep up with the Negro League drop and everything else going on?
So our best, although I would say we're not doing the best at it right now, is Instagram. So at Sandlot Goods on Instagram is where we'll try and drop things, as well as you can sign up at our website for our newsletter. We'll try and drop emails here and there announcing the new release. So I do joke right now, we're better at making hats than we are at social media. But we have a good steady following there, and so it's fun to put things out. Instagram is probably the best place to go.
I appreciate your time. I appreciate being in person and at the warehouse. So this is awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate the opportunity.
To keep up with new drops and products being released, follow Sandlot Goods on social media or visit their website. For more KC content and podcast updates, follow me on Instagram at KC by Sari. Yeah.